Right now, abortion is our topic on this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and our guest is Dr. Paul Moreno, who is a professor of history and also dean of social sciences at Hillsdale College. And Dr. Moreno, it's great to have you on the program. Am I saying your name right? It's spelled M-O-R-E-N-O.
That's right, yes. Thanks
okay.
for having me.
All right, sure. And your website is hillsdale.edu. Okay, here's a question for you. You apparently think that maybe some of the abortion rights extremists have overplayed their hand. For example, we can all remember that scene about 2 months ago when people were applauding, giving a standing ovation in Albany, New York, when the legislature passed a law that basically allowed for abortion right up to birth, the moment of birth in that particular state. And are you saying that laws like that maybe have gone too far, and that's why we're seeing what's happening in Alabama and Georgia, et cetera?
Yes, and the celebratory mood of that when they lit up the Empire State Building in pink, that kind of affirmation of abortion as, you know, not just something that's, you know, as Democrats like Bill Clinton used to talk about, it's something that's necessary but should be safe and rare.
Mm-hmm.
They're turning it into a positive good argument on behalf of abortion. I think people are not used to thinking about it that way, and they're going to start asking questions like, well, what is it that actually justifies an abortion? What are the reasons that need to be given for abortion? And the pro-abortion people are saying, well, there are no reasons need to be given at all. It's a matter of, you know, does not need any justification.
Wow. You know, it's so interesting, too, when you think about the word abortion, apart from the context of medical abortion, usually it's a negative thing. For example, if a mission has to be aborted, mm-hmm. that means you have to scrap it. But that may be the better decision. Maybe that's a bad analogy to use. That may be a better decision than have a rocket go up and then, you know, it blows up in the space, you know. But still, abortion is a negative thing.
Right. It's something that the point is that it's a moral thing. And saying that the New York Times and other papers pointed out to some, you know, really hard cases in which most people might be willing to justify abortion, you know, cases of rape and incest and things like that. But by conceding that point, that abortion is something of moral significance, that you need to give reasons in order to justify, I think the pro-abortion people are going to come to see that most people don't think that the reasons that are given for most abortions are adequate.
Now, there was a poll recently, I saw this reported in Breitbart, where that said something like 75% of American college students think abortion is right, and it seemed to imply for virtually any circumstances.
That could well be. I mean, the polling on abortion is all over the place. It depends on how questions are framed. If perhaps just this particular demographic of college students is not representative. So I'm always a little skeptical when it comes to polling about it. That's why one of the reasons why the way we're seeing this play out politically, where, you know, legislators actually have to be concrete about this and take positions, that's the way in which, you know, public opinion is really manifested in a democracy.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I will say this. About 20 years ago, I interviewed the late George Gallup Jr. He was in charge of Gallup polls for forever, you know, just about. And it was his dad that started it. Okay, and I remember this. He said this. He said, listen, 20% of Americans are strongly pro-choice, 20% of Americans are strongly pro-life, and 60% are in the mushy middle, and you can get them to be pro-life or pro-choice depending on how, you know, what the poll is and how you ask it and so forth. I thought that was, you know, I think that's still probably true.
I think that sounds exactly right, yes.
Okay, let me ask you this. There has not been a vote, really, like a midterm or an election, a presidential election, since some of these extreme laws have been passed related to abortion.
That's right. The last midterm elections in 2018, I think the New York law came out at the beginning of the new year. Yeah.
Yeah.
In fact, they passed it on the anniversary, January 22nd, the anniversary of Roe versus Wade.
Oh, wow. So how do you think that's going to play out? In other words, abortion is definitely going to be a big issue in the 2020 election. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, the last time I think we saw something like this was just before the Planned Parenthood against Casey case, 1992. That was a presidential election year. And recent decisions by the Supreme Court indicated that Roe versus Wade might be on the rocks. And Planned Parenthood actually expected to lose that case and were mobilizing to make abortion their chief issue in the 1992 campaign. As it turned out, they more or less won the decision, and that kind of neutralized the issue.
Yeah, and then Bill Clinton went on to win that same year.
Yeah.
Yeah, I never even thought of those two in the same year, but you're exactly right.
Yeah, and in a peculiar election like that where you had a Ross Perot who took 19% of the popular vote, Bill Clinton barely won 40%. So every election is always very tricky to say why the result was, you know, when 150 million people, 150 million individual decisions are being made. But I think basically the Supreme Court neutralized the issue of abortion. And a lot of people thought that if the decision had gone the other way, it might have been the central issue of the election. If the court, the Supreme Court now acts upon some of these laws like the Georgia ones or the Missouri one, that could well make it the central issue in the 2020 election.
If a Martian were to come and visit America, he would assume that the vast majority of the country favors abortion, you know, because it's seriously in the culture at large. You can't get around this. I mean, just look at the example of Georgia passing a law saying that, okay, if there's a heartbeat, if the baby, the unborn baby already has a heartbeat, then we will not allow abortions after that. That's kind of a humane law, is it not?
Yeah.
But it's being viewed, you know, in fact, one politician called it an evil act. And Hollywood is saying, oh, we're going to boycott Georgia, working in Georgia if this passes.
Yeah. It's very interesting because New York had what at the time, before Roe v. Wade in 1970, they had adopted the most liberal abortion law in the country. It was pretty much abortion on demand up to 24 weeks gestation. Georgia, on the other hand, because there's a companion case to Roe, Doe versus Bolton, that was Georgia's law was overturned. Georgia's law wasn't as liberal. It allowed for what are known as therapeutic abortions, which basically meant there had to be a medical justification for this. There had to be some medical reason for this. A hospital committee, more than one physician, would have to give the reasons for it. And that law was also struck down.
Okay, you're going to have to give me a few more details on Doe v. Bolton. I've heard about Doe v. Bolton for years. I know Sandra Cano was at the center of it. I know that all she wanted was a divorce. And she was under the understanding she would get that. And that was not correct. They lied to her. She signed a paper, and boom, next thing you know, she was in the center. She was the Doe of Doe v. Bolton. And also Roe, by the way, also said this was a bunch of lies, but all that came after January 22nd, 1973. Bolton was a Georgia representative or some sort of Georgia official?
The attorney general or whoever would have been defending the Georgia law.
And the Georgia law did not allow for therapeutic abortions, or
it
did?
No, it did allow for therapeutic abortions, but you had to get the approval of a hospital committee. More than one physician. There's usually a committee of five in a hospital, and two of them would be obstetricians, and one would have to not be the physician who's going to perform the abortion. A lot of states had laws like that before Roe versus Wade struck them all down.
Right, right. But it's very important, though, because sometimes if you say, well, Roe v. Wade gave us abortion on demand, then some people say, oh, no, it didn't. If you look at it real carefully, it's all about the first trimester versus the second and third trimester. But Doe v. Bolton, the companion decision of Roe, in effect, the two together, and Roe v. Wade being the umbrella phrase for the two combined, gave us abortion on demand in America.
You're absolutely right. And there was a deliberate attempt to conceal how extensive those decisions were. The New York Times headline read something like, you know, court upholds first trimester abortions. But if you read the opinion, it's very clear. And as you put it quite rightly, Justice Blackmun, the author of the opinion, said that Roe and Doe had to be read together, you know, that they're a package. Blackmun insisted to the end of his life, though, that it didn't provide for abortion on demand because you could limit abortions being performed by physicians. That's one of the things that this year's New York law changed, which allowed physicians' assistants and nurse practitioners to perform abortions. And, of course, you have to find somebody to perform the abortion. No physicians can be compelled to perform abortions. So there does have to be a woman and a physician.
You know, what's fascinating about that New York law that you just mentioned and the fact that, well, physicians don't necessarily have to be directly party to it or participate in it. This came in January, about 3 or 4 months after the movie came out, Gosnell.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen the movie Gosnell?
No, I have. I've read a lot of reviews about that movie.
Oh, you must see it. You must.
And Unplanned was the other big one.
Yeah. Have you seen that one?
No, but again, I have a bunch of students who
you must see both of those. But the reason I bring up Gosnell is one of the things that they showed, that one of the horrors in that abortion clinic, and by anybody's standard, including the most liberal, pro-choice, you know, I'm for abortion, blah, 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 they wouldn't want to participate in that Philadelphia house of horrors.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things about it that was so amazing was that under Gosnell's, you know, leadership, kids, in some straight, you know, cases, kids off the street were administering anesthesias. You know, they were administering medicine and so forth without really a license to practice this stuff, and it led to even an example of a person dying.
Yep.
And of course, this guy is in jail and was convicted. He was an abortionist, and he was convicted in this country for basically for murder.
Yes, yeah, he was not. I mean, there's really, technically speaking, there's no such thing as an illegal abortion. What he was guilty of was infanticide. These children were born and killed them after birth.
Yeah, okay.
And for violating medical regulations and things like that.
Okay, we have just a couple minutes remaining. The fault lines in the culture wars, so often abortion is right at the front line. I maintain that part of the reason America is so divided about this is that we didn't decide Roe v. Wade. Seven men decided Roe v. Wade. And imposed upon it upon us, and you know, by judicial fiat, whereas different states, you know, had different views on this, and different people in the country.
Yeah, absolutely right. And the contrast with other, you know, advanced industrial democracies is pretty stark. Western European countries, where usually the national legislature imposed the abortion code, even though those countries are much more liberal than America, you know, the American population is much more conservative and religious than, say, France's. But their abortion laws are much more restrictive. Some of them are even more restrictive than the ones like the Georgia law that was struck down in Roe versus Wade. So, yeah, Roe versus Wade is wrong for a number of reasons, on substantive grounds, but also as a constitutional matter, in that this was the greatest overreach in the history of the Supreme Court, at least, you know, sort of apart from Dred Scott. And abortion and slavery, which was the issue in Dred Scott, are really the same issue. And I think that's why people are so, you know, riled up about it.
Abortion and slavery are the same issue. Can you clarify what you mean?
Well, you know, the court says that blacks in 19th century America are not constitutional persons, that none of the protections of the Constitution apply to them, is exactly what Justice Blackmun said about the unborn under the Constitution in the 20th century.
Okay. What are your thoughts about the Alabama law, which apparently was passed in such a, you know, with such stringent requirements and so forth, that maybe they're expecting it to be challenged and hoping it'll go all the way to the Supreme Court?
Yeah, I think what the court did, especially in the Casey case, it upheld some restrictions like you know, minors need the consent of their parents, at least with a judicial bypass, or other sort of marginal restrictions. It's what Justice O'Connor called the undue burden test, that you could restrict abortion as long as it didn't impose an undue burden. And I think a lot of people are expecting that the court won't overturn Roe and Casey completely, but it will simply allow more, it will define more and more restrictions as not imposing an undue burden. They did this in the, I forget which state it was, only a couple of days ago.
Missouri?
I'm not sure, but the issue was the disposal of fetal remains.
Oh, Indiana.
Okay, it's Indiana law, yeah. And there the court said, yeah, that's fine because that's going to have no impact, no impediment to a woman seeking an abortion, what you do with the remains of the unborn child afterwards. So you could imagine a series of more and more exceptions, liberalization of what an undue burden is. I think people like who passed the Georgia law, they want the whole hog. You know, they want to get to the fundamentals of this, not just to sort of whittle away at the periphery of Roe.
Yeah. All right, Dr. Paul Moreno, thank you so much for being with us. Appreciate it. Hillsdale.edu for more information.
Thanks very much for having me.